I was thinking I want to do one movie. And I wasn't thinking I'm going to do movies all my life. It's just like the first time I wanted to say something, it came up very naturally in the shape of a movie. Hello, I'm Denise Gamze-Erguven. I've been an Academy member since 2016. I'm a filmmaker and you're listening to My Life in Movies.
Why don't we start with your earliest childhood movie memory?
It was Amadeus from Milos Forman. The movie was about Mozart, and in our family, piano is a very important institution. My father considered, like, there was two forms of arts, like the dignified great arts and lower arts, and movies were more in the circus category. So
the highest, right?
Mozart was one of his gods, and we went to see the movie as if we were going to the opera. So I remember it was a weekday. I don't remember like why we were dressed up, but we were dressed up. And then we entered this place, and in my memory, the movie theater was very well decorated, and you know, it looked like an opera house more than anything else. Or maybe it's like the memories of the film that just have blurred everything else. And then the movie started, and it was a shock. Like, it was so many things that I didn't know about life at that age of your life. Normally, you don't even see films with shadows in them. Like, everything was very, very intense, and it stayed with me for a very long time. I have the impression it tinted almost years of my life. It was the first funeral that I saw. And there's so many strong relationships which are depicted in the film, like the father-son relationship, the rivalry between Salieri and Mozart. All those things really, really stayed with me. And I had the impression I was told secrets about life, like what life is about. I think I profoundly loved the film also. I just loved Tom Hulce and his laughter. His punk rock energy. And then I saw the movie many, many, many times throughout my teenager years. So it stayed with me for like 10 to 15 years. Like, it was a big, big thing.
Yes. You mentioned the rivalry. Was there much competition in your own family?
There was not so much like a competition between us, but there was this thing about, like, for example, seeing Mozart as a genius when he's very young, playing piano with his eyes closed in front of kings and popes. Like, we were playing piano every day. So there was like a bit of a reference of like where you should have been. like the relationship to music was not a very cool and relaxed one in my family. Like, the objectives were super high. So there was something there, not so much in the competition between the composers.
Okay.
But the father, definitely, like the father-son relationship, the father being like this looming figure in the life of his son.
Can you tell us a little bit more about where you grew up and what the family dynamic was like, if you don't mind?
I grew up mostly in Paris. We arrived when I was 6 months and we stayed there for 9 years. Then we went back to Turkey. So I was in Turkey between 9 and 11 years old. And then as a teenager, both of my parents were not in France with me and my sister. So we were growing up like away from our families. We had a bit of a special life back in those days in Paris because my father had a special job. We represented Turkey, like my father was a diplomat. We were both educated, like thinking you girls can do whatever you want in your lives. Like, our father empowered us a lot. I'm writing a film about those years. I have a special family, let's say it like that.
Why don't we discuss your teenage years, if there's a movie of significance there that you'd like to start with?
Those years, my compass to see movies a lot was the Cannes Film Festival. We were teenagers without parents living in Paris. So going to the movies was really something I did a lot. I knew, like, you know, the films and selections. I knew the posters all around the city. And that was a bit like giving me a path to discover movies. Mm-hmm. So I wrote Wild at Heart because I wanted the list to be like very strongly full of David Lynch. That movie was not at that time like the most important movie of those years, but it stayed with me through time. Like, still to this day, like, it always comes up. Like, I'm always thinking, oh, that shot in Wild at Heart, or when they did that in Wild at Heart. Like, it's everywhere. Like, there's a few movies like that I would refer to all the time.
Sailor! Love me, sweet.
curious, how frequent was the movie-going experience for you?
At that time, you had that little thing you bought at the newspaper stand where you had like all the movies and everything for the week. You even had movies starting at midnight. Like, we did go and see movies like that, but probably not in the week, of course. It was very, very frequent. I just remember being a permanent thing in our lives. Not almost every day, but not so far from it. Mm-hmm. Like those movies which like stop something in your life. And but the funny thing about your podcast is that I always think about the movies that influenced me the most, but not about the movies which really, really stamped a decade in your life.
Yeah, that's the hard thing.
Yes.
This is what is emblematic of your teenage years, would you describe? Mm. Or, I mean, I know it also would apply maybe to college, but coming a little bit back to your teenage years, I'm curious about how you would define that period for yourself.
I remember Pulp Fiction. I was reluctant to go and see Pulp Fiction. My then boyfriend was like really willing to see the movie. And for some reason, the poster was not appealing to me. And I saw the movie and I fell in love with it.
We happy? Vincent, we happy?
Yeah, we happy.
I was obsessed with it. Completely obsessed with the mood, the dialogue. Mm-hmm. And I remember us playing scenes of the movie because a little book came out with the script. So it was like very present. And I never think about that now. But if I think of myself as a teenager, yes, that was very important. And because of Tarantino movie soundtracks, you have those dialogues between songs. I can literally tell you the movie if you want.
Do you mind telling me a little bit about like your decision to go to film school?
I had met this young man, a boy, when I was 19. And we had like a very, very strong relationship for a few months. And, you know, it's like at those ages, a week after any relationship begins, you have the impression you knew that person your entire life. And it was someone who was very, I don't know, who had a special attitude in life, who was a bit provocative, who was very funny, who watched a lot of movies himself, and who told me, like, you have to watch this and you have to watch that. And I remember him, like, he was this very, very wild, funny thing and poetic thing and trying to, you know, like trying to be amazing all the time. And he was. And then he died a few months later. So my desire to make a film was I want to tell who this person was. One day during a nap, like 2 months after he had passed, I thought to myself, oh, this is the movie. And I almost like had it running in my mind. And to me, it was very, very joyful and extremely sad at the same time. And that was the start of everything. I was thinking I want to do one movie. And I wasn't thinking I'm going to do movies all my life. It's just like the first time I wanted to say something. It came up very naturally in the shape of a movie. And then I thought, okay, so I'm going to have to make a film school to do that movie. You know, like that's the way I processed the thing back then. And then a few years later, I went into this film school. And it was just not like one film, but it was each time I wanted to say something. It was in the shape of a film and had became like my language. And that was how it started.
The idea of being overwhelmed or like impacted by a person and then seeing the cinema within this person. Did that seem like a roadmap for how to engage with future stories?
My first feature film, which was about sisterhood, I was processing that a lot. The relationship to my sister, things about like what it is to be a girl in Turkey. Like there was like specific problematics which were at the center of my attention. And now I'm writing something about Turkey, my dad. And so I'm thinking about those things. I'm seeing the cinema in that. But I'm not thinking like this is going to be what I'm going to do all my life. And it's going to be one relationship after another. But it happens to be like that. For example, from my first feature, Mustang. When I was thinking about what it is to be a woman, it was linked to all the women around me. So a lot about sisterhood and our relationships. Yes. So it's a bit, as you say, like seeing the cinema in a person, and it's always linked to something a bit bigger than only that person.
Transitioning to your college years, I'm interested in this period for you. And if there's a movie that you'd like us to talk about that made a significant impact.
This one specific movie called Le Départ.
Rues et ruelles, chambres livides.
the premise, it's super simple. Like it's a boy who's looking for a Porsche all day because he wants to participate to a race. It's just very energetic and full of life and with incredibly beautiful shots. And for some reason, the momentum of it, like it captures youth. And in the meantime, the boy falls in love and forgets about the race. Like it's a rocket of youth. I felt very close to that film.
And do you remember the context around the first time you saw it? Or
it was a friend who showed it to me. There were problems with the rights of the movie, so it came out at La Cinémathèque in Paris, and after years, and it was like almost like a secret movie that nobody could see for a long time, and it there was like this film school's secret, you have to see this vibe about the film.
Interesting. And that was just sort of expressed like word of mouth?
It was the like film school rumor. Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful. You have also Skolimowski's obsession throughout the film. Like he's very obsessed with the passage of time, with youth, with aging. There's like some of the most beautiful shots in the world, and it doesn't miss. Like each time I see the movie again, like my emotion is total. Though again, like it's a very simple film. It feels as if it's a weekend movie to teenagers, but it's not. It's like very sophisticated filmmaking to really encapsulate that energy of youth. That little magic of what it is to be young and open and just meeting other young people and having like those little bubbles of happiness.
Is there another movie from this period that you would like to talk about or a movie moment that you can recollect?
Germany Year Zero. It's like one of the five movies I would always have in mind for a shot. Like always say, oh, that scene, that shot, that situation. And it's probably one of the most incredible movies of the world. It's shot just after the fall of Germany and natural locations. So you do see the city completely bombed and destroyed and still people who are loyal to Nazis. And so there's like that documentary element about the film, which is completely crazy. The grace of the film, just like picking a camera in that context and doing this very, very simple storyline, a complete tragedy. It's just one of the strongest movies ever. It's just like the pictures you see from World War II. It looks like there's no production design. There's no costume design. It's just like that documentary dimension about it is extremely strong in it, capturing like that real life taking place in front of their eyes.
And did you feel like you yourself as a filmmaker, you didn't necessarily want to make neorealist films, but you wanted to incorporate aspects of their approach to movies? Is that fair to say?
When I arrived to film school, I remember like when I did my first short film, I remember I had this thing which was a bit like preparing too much a little bit, like rehearsing too much, and then realizing that it's very stiff and not working that well. We did this documentary in film school, and I was thinking like, this is so much not going to be my thing, and I never wanted to do a documentary. But after that, it changed radically my perception of everything, even to directing actors or making films. Like that documentary experience mm-hmm. just pushed me to always try to capture life, or like try to have a safe haven to have like actors live something in front of you instead of like rehearsing something.
After college, is there a movie that was a significant moment for you?
To me, like almost the most perfect movie of all time is Mulholland Drive. I guess there's something about, there's like this wholly subjective narrative, which is made of dreams and memories and makes it much more real, just pure perfection. And to me, like it was maybe the only film of David Lynch which didn't seem so puzzling. The joy of understanding the film was so great. And there was this buzz about the movie of like people not understanding anything about it.
This was your interpretation upon first viewing, that it made sense to you.
I remember like we watched the movie with a friend, and I remember like the movie ended. And so to be completely honest with you, I just told myself I didn't understand anything. Like what the hell just happened?
No, I banda. There is no band.
And I remember having a frantic moment of like, whose point of view are we in? And what happened? What happened? What happened?
Yeah.
And then when you think about it, like the first three quarters of the movie, it's almost a narcissistic story, you know, like everything is very, very, very perfect for this girl. And then you understand, like, we're in her dream and things didn't go as they did in the last quarter of the movie. You're seeing, like, the real life people. Like, every element you see, like, for example, the man who stole her lover in her narcissistic dream, like, his credit cards don't work and he's chased out of his job and he arrives home and his wife is cheating on him. Like, the worst things happen to him. So there's like this perfect world in at the beginning, and those little elements are like you can start picking them up one after the other, and everything makes perfect sense. And even like the moment when the character wakes up and everything. And so yeah, it was after like a moment of let's break this down. I just loved it, and I watched it 1,000 times. Completely love it.
Right, that can be so exciting to kind of uncover that language of a movie or like the articulation of it. Tell me a little bit more about what was going on in your life around this time.
I was going through the contest of film school. It was called Les Finis, and it's a film school where you have a 5-month contest, and basically you have one chance out of 100 of getting in.
Whoa.
And you have like exams with elimination.
Really? It sounds like a reality show.
Yes. It's like the process is super difficult. And at that time, I wasn't French yet. And so I wasn't sure I was going to be able to stay in France if like there was that dynamic. And there was like, I want to make films as well. So I really had the impression that it was like going into film school or death, like, you know, like, or like no life anymore. It was a bit intense. And given that we have like, statistically, it's like a huge long shot to get in that film school.
Wow.
I was not super relaxed. I was having like very dark thoughts, and I remember seeing Mulholland Drive on a moment, which was like, whoa, you know, like a moment where I had the impression there was like this two different paths in my life, and one was super beautiful and with light, and the other one was very dark. And thank God it worked out. I was a bit too intense at those ages. I just calmed down afterwards.
Tell me a little bit more about this film school. Is there a movie from that period that we should talk about?
That film school was some of the happiest years of my life. I just loved completely being there. It's a film school where, well, they take like 6 student directors, 6 student script writers, 6, like every single department, 6 of them. Mm-hmm. So we're like 6 little teams making films. And it's not it's not a film school where you're sitting on benches and it's not theoretical. Like, you start off doing 3 short films on the first few days. So you don't even have the time to like be frightened or anything. You just do things. It's absolute luxury. Like, you have all the material in the world and you're doing one film after another. Because like you're learning so fast, like in your life after that, like you don't do films back to back all the time. Just pure bliss, revolution. Completely loved every single moment of it. I was at the Cannes Film Festival with my finishing film at Ciné Fondation, and I remember it was just magic. We were in the belly of the festivals, and you're like a baby filmmaker, but they're still like really so kind with you. So this is like the funny thing, because I remember like going to Cannes a few times before doing my first feature, and each time, like, I had gone there to l'atelier with a script, and it's literally like those years where you're trying to make a film and nothing works, and they come and pick you with like the chauffeur, and they're kind with you. And I remember like being ushered at the very first minutes of the film inside like the huge auditorium to see L'Enfant.
Bruno? Bruno!
Qu'est-ce que tu veux?
I'm not so sure of what was the film of the day. And being in total shock, it was shocking how good it was.
Yeah.
There was this chase with like the little moped, that very long scene. Which ends in the river. And it's so completely brilliant, like shot after shot after shot. Like, I remember in the audience, we were looking at each other, like, you know, people just like turning and locking eyes. I'm like, okay, this is the Golden Palm.
Coming forward into your 30s, is there a movie that you'd like to discuss?
The Wolf of Wall Street.
I was selling garbage to garbage men and making cash hand over fist. The only problem you're gonna have is that you didn't buy more.
Boom! Shot.
It was one of those movies I went to see like on the day it came out. It happened a lot with Scorsese movies. Like I went to see Casino on the day it came out. I went to see like a lot of Scorsese movies and with like great level of anticipation. Scorsese for me was one of those rare filmmakers who does these extremely elaborate like Skudimovsky type of shots, one after the other, which are like masterful. And what's beautiful about that is also like the degree of life he captures each time. Like that's the level of exuberant life and his taste for exuberant life. And I do love big actor pieces.
Second key to success in this racket is this little baby right here. It's called cocaine.
I enjoy like very exuberant, very warm-blooded, passionate, over-the-top acting.
I have to draw the parallel to the guy that got you into the filmmaking. It seems like you're almost describing this person that inspired
yes.
you.
Yes, that exuberant acting and The Wolf of Wall Street being so full of that and all those scenes. And I know I remember people having a lot of discussions about the content, and there's a lot of, to me, confused discussions about, like, you know, when people start tackling movies because of their subject matter without understanding that maybe, you know, you're not necessarily pro something, you're just like showing human nature.
Sure.
And so people were like, oh, this is like an immoral movie, or why are we watching A Wolf of Wall Street? Or like there was a lot of confused things. Like also like Kathryn Bigelow gets that a lot. Like she gets attacked for the content of her movies. And sometimes like people don't necessarily understand the distance between the subject and the way it's treated.
Yeah. And seeing Wolf of Wall Street for yourself, did the content have much of an impact on you? Like in terms of that world of stock traders and the kind of greed that is on display there?
I'm just fascinated by every aspect of what it is to be a human being and every different specimens of us. And this is like one of us, a very curious example of our own species. And then what was so brilliant was that scene after scene, like it's the marvel of the richness, the craziness of every single situation. You know, like it's that just pure joy. Like you're thinking the writers, it must have been delicious to have those ideas and have fun with them. And then to act those scenes and to film them and like the whole thing of it. Like it's, to me, that film is literally a treasure.
Yeah. I'm curious about the next movie that you have on the list here.
Which one? Melancholia?
Yeah.
The whole thing, like the way Lars von Trier captures a specific anxiety of the end of the world, the way he managed to tell the story, like of that planet getting closer with that little tool they built, which is like this little very strange, how do you say that, frame of a lens. Mm-hmm. I also like both of the actors, Charlotte Gainsbourg and Kirsten Dunst, were so incredible. And Lars von Trier has these female characters which dive so deeply in martyrdom. Like sometimes it almost felt like he had a sadistic relationship to his main characters at times. It felt like it was pushing it a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, those beautiful shots of Earth from space, the music. Like it should have almost been like the Palme d'Or that year.
I don't know if it's exactly clear cut, but this conceptualization of a character that has suicidal ideations, is depressive, and yet when the end of the world comes, there's nobody better prepared for it than her. I don't know. That was my impression.
Took it more for us, like we're having these anxieties. I don't know for you, but in Europe, we're like quite big on ecological anxieties. Being able to weave that through a film like this felt so beautiful. Like that's the way I saw it.
As an expression of his own depression around the way that we're treating the planet.
Yes.
Yeah. And do you remember seeing it? Do you remember that experience?
Well, that was the year when I saw almost every single film of the selection in Cannes. So I saw it during the premiere. And so in that huge, huge, huge screen with the best sound in the world. And so literally we were like out in space, orbiting around planets. Like the experience of that screening was just a marvel.
Why don't we talk about the movie of most recent memory that made a significant impact on you?
Yeah, it was The Favourite from Yorgos Lanthimos. Just like one of those perfect movies, and again it's like one of those movies where you have the impression you've seen it all and somebody comes and breaks the whole thing and does this amazing, incredible thing. And even at the beginning, like, I remember feeling uncomfortable with the filming, which was so distorted, like everything, like the very, very wide lenses and those pans. And then it makes so perfect sense eventually, like when you move further and further in the movie. Like, you can think at the very beginning, like the first few shots, like, is it this very bad concept of, like, are we going to have like this bad idea of, which is going to be annoying the whole time. And then it makes total sense, like this distortion in this context is so great.
I'm curious why it makes total sense as the movie progresses.
We're in this world where relationships are so shifted, like the fact that there's this royal figure with so arbitrarily so much power on everybody else's life, and who's doing these almost like Alice in Wonderland queen, like, let's chop his head. Like, she says that line, like, as the queen in Alice in Wonderland.
Enough! Stop! Be gone! I command it! I don't want to hear it!
And the distortion of being in this world with rules which are completely arbitrary has the effect of distorting every single relationship. But those are the films that really stay through time.
Thank you for sharing everything you did and the list. There's a couple on here I definitely need to check out.
Thank you. Lovely to speak with you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This series was produced by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.